Welcome to Lisa's Walk the Talk Show, where you'll get a sneak peek into stories and lives behind the authors, entertainers, and celebrities that you love to read about. Sit back, relax, and let Lisa and her guests entertain you. Now, here's your host, Lisa.
Good morning. This is Lisa from Lisa's Walk the Talk Show. And today I have with me Ed Fisher. How are you? Good morning.
Well,
thanks for coming
on
my show.
Thank you. Yes.
I'm so honored to get to be on a show with you. The last time I think we got to personally have some time was probably right at the start of COVID, I think, or right in that mix somewhere that first year, and I was taking pictures for the Faces of the Pandemic book I'm working on, and you were telling me kind of how COVID had affected your life at that time. Do you remember that? I got some good shots of you, by the
way. I did, yeah. Well, it's a long story, but I just managed to do cartoons for my whole life.
How did
that happen to somebody?
That's
what I wanted to do when I was 5 years old, and when I'm 85 years old now, so.
No, you're not 85. You can't be.
Yeah, and
on Google, I saw you were 96. I said on Google, I googled you, and it said you were 96 years old.
No, Jerry's 96.
Jerry's 92.
Is he going to be there today? I think he is, isn't he? Jerry Fearing?
Jerry Fearing is from St. Paul Pioneer Press, another editorial cartoonist for those who don't know who he is. And he will be coming for the book signing on Monday at 11:30. I think we have you scheduled central time for a couple hours, or, you know, if you need to take a break, that's fine too. We're all understanding. And we just look forward to having you. I've been inviting everybody. So if you're in the Rochester area on Monday, please come by and honor these two editorial cartoonist greats from the area, and just thank them for their contributions with their art and their time and their wisdom and their wit that's documented well through history and many awards. And Ed Fisher, who's on the line with us now, exact age, we don't really know, because on Google you're 96 and in person you can be any age you want to be on that show.
It's only 39.
Yeah, I heard that you had that celebration earlier this year, so we'll stick with 39. That's good. If people can't see you as a 39-year-old when they show up, that's up to them, you know. They got to figure it out themselves. So, Ed, tell me, you said you started when you were about 5 years old. Wow, that is amazing, because not many people recognize or realize, you know, their talent. What inspired you at that age? Were you just Did you just have a pen in your hand, or what?
Well, you know, something to begin with, I thought it was just a fun thing to do and anybody could do it, you know, and as I went on in my career, which has been just great, I found out it was something that you could take a serious subject and you could make fun of it, and people like that. They don't like it when you get a little mean, you know, but, and so I've been successful now at four newspapers, and I'm still syndicated in about 30 newspapers.
Wow, that's a lot.
And
you don't plan on retiring.
Well, you know, I didn't know. And I tell me why I'm not doing it. Because I've certainly put in my time, you know. It's been one thing after another, including those four newspapers, including the Star and Tribune.
What do you think of the newspaper industry? I mean, do you think that they'll have a revival, you know, in the future? Do you think all news will just be online? Or what do you think will be the future? Give us a prediction.
You know,
give us Ed's prediction.
Well, I think that there is a place for it. You know, I think electronically, you know, in fact, I was on TV for several years doing just a cartoon like you would get in a newspaper. But unfortunately, I belong to the Cartoonist Association, and we started out with 350 members a long time ago, and now it's down to something like less than 25 people doing cartoons on the newspaper. That's a big loss.
That is. And, you know, I know a lot of the cartoonists have their own books. I don't know what the future is either, but I can tell you from a book's perspective, and people listening to my show have heard me say this before, people love their Kindles, they love their Nooks, they love their electronic ways of reading their information, but I don't think an hour goes by where people come in and say, don't come in and say, I just have to have something in my hand. And it's not just the elderly or the people 39 like you, it's the kids. You know, they're on electronic media all day. They are actually, they're reading War and Peace. They're reading the old classics. And to me, that is, I just smile when I see that. You know, the foreigners that are coming over that are trying to learn another language, they look for easy read books to learn our language better as well. So, you know, we stock a little bit of everything.
The times have changed, but there's still room for, I mean, there are cartoonists working. And sometimes they're setting shop at home, which is a good idea. You know, you can be your own business. And I think that it's still a very unique thing. You know, it can make a big difference in an election. That's what I found anyway. I got people throwing rotten tomatoes at my house.
Well, I'll tell you, you had told me back when we were doing that little interview before about your being even threatened by the political cartoons or just even any cartoon, I guess. I don't remember your exact words without going back to my notes, but how exciting of a life is it to be a political cartoonist? What kind of things do you get to face?
It's a shame because, you know, I've had such a stellar career. I mean, I didn't even experience it at the time because I thought, well, it's just a job, you know. But going back, and I met four presidents. I met three into the Oval Office and then at the LBJ branch. And I gave out, I think, hundreds of talks at schools and churches and civic groups. So it was a heck of a ride for me and still doing them. You know, I still have cartoons in 30 newspapers.
That's amazing. And you're on, what's the cartoon site that you're on? If people want to pick up, well, let me mention this first. So if you want to buy some of Ed's original cartoons, and stop me if I'm wrong, they can go to your website, Ed Fischer, FISCHER.com, and buy some of your original cartoons. Is that still correct? I just want to make sure so I'm not giving bad information. I'm going to buy some of your old cartoons, actually. I haven't decided which ones yet. So.
Buy one that's signed, and then you really got something.
That's right. I was actually thinking of getting the Johnny Carson one, if you still have that one, because that's a soft spot in my heart for my growing up years. You know, when we'd go fishing up at the lake, that was the only channel we would get in, and I can still hear them announcing here. I better not do it on the air, but you know what they said. That's probably all copyrighted. I don't want to infringe on anybody. But, that one is a really cute cartoon. And, you know, I'm sure you get asked, where do you get your inspiration? But I'll maybe phrase it a little bit differently. You know, when you're talking with somebody, meeting somebody interesting in the day, do you find it's just like almost like those people were placed in your life so you could get an idea later in the day? Like, do you ever have a day where you think nothing's going right and everything is, and then you meet this person and suddenly they're like, you're like, wow, I know why I met you. I'm supposed to do a cartoon on you.
Yeah, and for example, I went to New York to get an award, and I sat next to Barbara Walla. So it was quite a day.
Aww.
And I had my daughter. She came up to me and said, oh, I'm so proud of your dad. But I ended up winning about 29 awards. And I really didn't try to enter them. You know, I just thought if I was good enough, they would know it. And that's what happened, I think. It's just Minnesota cartoons and national cartoons.
You know, Minnesota is very popular. I mean, I guess if I had my store back in Wisconsin, I'd say Wisconsin is. But in Minnesota, I mean, even just yesterday, I had somebody in looking for a Minnesota, anything Minnesota. I sell a lot of Minnesota. So if you're a Minnesota author or somebody who's got a book, cookbook, anything, maybe stop by and say hello and show me your book. And I've got Ed's books in my store, a handful of them. We got to get some more in. On Monday, he'll be signing. How many books are you bringing on Monday, Ed? How many of your books are you bringing?
Well,
one of each?
I'm going to bring those to the book signing. But I've actually got 12 books. over the years. Mm-hmm. And what you need is a Ludicus book.
I know I do. I think I may have found one at a sale.
You know what? There is a big difference between, I've lived in other states. I worked for mm-hmm. newspapers in Tulsa and Omaha. And I think Minnesota is just a great place. It's, you know, for one thing, they didn't even vote for Trump last time. And so I'm so proud of them. Sorry.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, getting to work in the different states, I'm sure, I mean, you know, it's really weird because every time somebody comes in my store, I can tell just in like 3 minutes that they're from Oklahoma. And they're like, how did you know that? And it's like, you guys just have like this, they have a very specific dialect. I don't know, for some reason I always pick it up. And, you know,
One of the greatest moments of my life is when I was coming back, I think, from Tulsa to Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And I got across the state line and they played polka music. Oh, I'm home.
There was a polka convention. Yeah. Well, you know, I actually do kind of like polka music myself. I have some fond memories of being a kid when my dad was alive and, you know, you'd go to the weddings or whatever and they always had the polka music. So my polka dance partner was my dad. But I actually was working my store one day and there was a polka convention and they were going to drag me out. I said, no, really, I have to stay and man my desk. But I actually kind of would have gone down for like 10 minutes if somebody had been there to watch my desk. But I really had fun watching them in their costume and all that. And that brought back some fond memories. We get a lot of conventions that go through Rochester and part of the city here. We see it all, right? And tell us
In fact, I think one of our cartoonist associations was held in Minneapolis, along with a lot mm-hmm. of other big cities like London and Canada and Mexico. We really got around. And, you know, it was really crazy because all cartoonists, mm-hmm. you know, they all were funny and very interesting to talk to. And I did that for over, you know, like 40 years. I mean, every year there was a convention someplace.
All year to save up wisecracks for that, huh? You know, like you had to kind of think of some puns and outwit your competition. How much competition is there for your spot?
Your readership might want to know if they really are interested. I have about 4,000 cartoons in a place called Cartoon Stock in London. Mm-hmm. And I think if you just go to cartoonstock.com and look up my name, I think they could, you know, be entertained with cartoons about everything, you know, especially about the news, you know, because that's what I do. You know, I have the luxury of having an opinion about everything I do, but what I've learned to do is that don't do it seriously. Do it, like, in a fun way, and you're okay. But I have had people, I've had many threats. I had threats from my kids where I had to go to school and get them out of school, and my editor calling me once and saying that the guy has a gun and he's going to find me.
Isn't that horrible? You had told me that when we, yeah.
Well,
that's,
you know,
scary.
It was tough. Yeah, it really was. And people are very serious about it. And it gave me the chance to branch out too. I also did cartoons for television and of course the books Even keeping the syndicate up and running was a chore. But I'm glad I had a chance to do it. In fact, I really do. Since most of my newspapers now are in, not all of them, but most of them are in Minnesota, and it didn't vote for Trump. See, I mean, I take the credit for that.
So
I hope somebody on your show here is laughing now.
I'm sure they are. I'm sure everybody, well, you've probably got your split opinions on that also. But, you know, the truth is you've got the right to say your piece and do your cartoons. You know, I hate seeing people banned. I hate seeing people divided. But there's no way to please everybody, right? There's no way. And I think you had told me at the last time we interviewed was you made a comment, something like you just have to kind of make it, even, like, or I don't know your exact words without looking at my notes, but you were saying something like that. Like, if you make fun of both sides, it's okay, or something. Do you want to elaborate on that again? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Well, you know what, though? I said that, but in a way, I think that's foolish, especially if you're coming on and love to be a cartoonist, you know, politics. You really can't do that. You can't take one side or the other, because kind of papers, for example, that I'm in are weekly, and they could lose readership over something that's too serious.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've learned my lesson that I can still get the point across if I just use what they are, cartoons. You know, I can think of an example if you want to hear it. But at one point we had a big busing problem in Omaha, and I had two kids walking out of a school and saying, actually, I'm not worried about the subject that we were talking about. He says, I don't want to go to school. You didn't get it, did you?
Sorry,
well,
I'm a little slow.
I'll send you one in the mail.
I need to see it. I guess I'm more of a visualist, you know. I got the lady.
Well,
I had a lady come in.
It is a visual.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, in your books, is that featured in one of your books too? Do you have like a Omaha, like each paper you work for, do you have your own collection of cartoons from those papers?
I didn't get serious about collecting my books going way back, but I still have a number of them that I could not bring in. The one that is selling the best right now is Boomer Humor, and it's, you know, for older people. And I think it's doing well because, you know, when you do things like yourself like this instead of a publisher, it's work. You know, we have to do
it
that.
It is a lot of work. Yeah. It's distribution is hard. I know I'll always carry your books. I sell them
You know, it's like if you decide to do it and you do a promotion that you're proud of and you send it out to about 2,000 newspapers, You might get five or six, and that's the way it works. For me, anyway.
Tell us, you know, because people don't know, what is the average in today's terms? You know, people are working for $20, $25 an hour that used to be a $5 job or a $10 job. What has the wages increased with the editorial cartoons and just selling your cartoons, or has it gone down or stayed the same, or what can somebody expect to make?
It's a hit or miss, but, you know, the thing is that you should try to branch out a little bit like I did doing with my books and with giving talks, by the way. I think I gave a couple hundred talks in the time that I worked at the Rochester Post Bulletin. And, you know, I just knew what to do, I guess. I did it kind of naturally, and then I look back on it and think, well, you know, I had a serious disease when I was 30 years old. And when I was the next year, I went and got another job in another state. You know, and that's pretty bold. I'll do that. And editorial cartoonists really had it soft, because when I went down to Tulsa, for example, they had a brand new spanking room ready for me with a drawing board. And it was right outside where everybody got together for the newspaper and talked about what they're going to do, you know, and I was part of that.
How exciting. I mean, you getting to have your own space, did you have like your own, you got to do your own thing? Nobody said, hey, you have to do it on this topic or that topic. You got to run free, right? You were, because I think there's nothing worse with being an artist than having the demands of exactly what you need to do. If, you know, if you can just do your art from inside and not have dampers on you, so to speak, you can, the art will be different. It'll be better. Did you find that, or did you have to work to?
You know, I think it's just smart. First of all, you know, you want to do something that's good, that makes the point, and at the same time, maybe gives somebody a chuckle. And even at my talks, I would work that way. And you have to make adjustments as you go along. And it's really sad because there's so many kids that want to be cartoonists, and it doesn't look very hopeful, you know, because of what we've just talked about a little while ago. But you could still do it as a hobby. You could still. I remember drawing for every school I went to. I drew cartoons, including University of Minnesota and McGill College. So that was great.
I suppose it's hard for you to put a pen down. Yeah. Do you find that? Go ahead.
Oh no, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, you know, do you find that you're stuck using one kind of medium? I mean, do you draw, like, if you were handled a paintbrush, could you paint it, draw it, or do you have to have a pen, a pencil, or is there a certain medium that you like to use when you draw?
Yeah, you know, that's been my style. I know what my art looks like it belongs to me, so I don't really even have to sign it. People would know by the way that it's drawn.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you really should be cognizant of your craft. And, for example, I mean, I got tired of, you know, doing a cartoon in 2 hours, and I had the rest of the day off. So I started doing illustrations for the stories that were in the paper. And that was just as much fun, even though it's just the art. It's not about an opinion about anything. I think you just have, and you especially have to be so careful now because the nation is so split right down the middle, it seems like. And it's kind of sad.
Yeah. Is there a way that the cartoonists can save the world? Maybe it's going to be the cartoonists that save it. I don't know. Is it? I mean, can they?
Well, you know,
can they help?
You know, after having the 50 years ahead doing it, I could tell when it was making a difference. I remember they were going to sell a parcel of park that was used a lot by people in Omaha, and I did a really good cartoon about it, and they rescinded doing it because they realized that so many people are using it, you know, and it was triggered, I think, by the cartoon. A lot of times you just have to say, oh, that must have worked, but you really don't know for sure. You know, it's the things that you hear back, you know, you just don't know. You know, I really been down and, you know, like meeting presidents, for example, and even Ronald Reagan was in Rochester and at the hospital at Mayo. And he saw one of my cartoons. I guess he couldn't stop laughing. And so he asked me to bring it up to him. And I did. Signed.
Wow.
Couldn't judge him.
Isn't
usually,
that
something? I got the money for anything I sold people.
What did he say to you when you walked in the room? Did you get a picture with him?
I remember doing so many bad cartoons about the senator from Minnesota years ago. And and I was doing a good job because they were kind of digging. And I went to town in Minneapolis and I went to a restaurant and there was only one seat left. And which, you know, it was a senator. So I introduced myself. I could never do a bad cartoon about him again because he was such a nice guy.
Isn't that something? Yeah, that's...
But not the same.
I think what's that?
Well,
and then you had
it was just a chance, of course, a chance meeting, and I run into that a lot. Though I used to go out and do a thing called Drawing the Week to a Close or something like that. And what it was really a comic strip where I talked to people, did their caricature, and it was more like writing than it is drawing. But you ran into so many different people at the Mayo Clinic. You know, Garrison Keillor. I remember talking to him and to the gal that goes, howdy, you know, and I wanted to talk to her so bad because she's an interesting character. And the guy that was with her said, oh, you can't do that. She's busy. And she said, no, let's go in and have a cup of coffee. It was great.
Wow.
Yeah.
You've got such a list of people you've been in touch with.
I don't think that did what I did during those 50 years. I just don't think so because it was so... And for a while, the Post Bulletin was giving me a full page to do the best cartoons I've done in the last 2 months or something like that. But nobody else is doing that. Full page.
Yeah. That's a lot. I know. I've seen some of them. I grew up watching your work and, you know, observing your wit and humor. And...
Yeah, I think so, too. In fact, I'm hoping that's true on Monday when, you know, we're at the book signing. But people, I think, do remember me. I've run into people even though I'm retired, and Post Bulletin has moved out of town. So it's just a matter of people remembering. I think they do. I mean, they look at my work for, I remember, you know, I just thought of something the other day that was such a joy. But I remember the time that they gathered all 250 people from the Post Bulletin, and because of a survey they did. And they said the first question was, what do you look at first in the bulletin? What do you read first? And I said, what do they know? And then she said, Ed Fisher.
Oh, isn't that awesome?
And somebody in the back said, what do they know? and a dozen more like it, you know, over the years. Just amazing. I wish I could help kids develop the class, you know, but it doesn't seem like it'd be worth it, you know, because it's just not something that we're going to have, I don't think, eventually.
I think that's a really positive thing. Ed, I'm telling you, these kids coming in are buying up the Calvin and Hobbes. They're buying Garfield. They're buying every cartoon I have. Can't keep myself in stock. And I think you creating some kind of a course or some kind of, don't worry about what your instruction is going to be for them now. Worry about giving them, what's the old saying? Don't give a man a fish, teach him how to fish, you know that saying. And teach them how to draw. Teach them how to create let life unfold for them. And when the time has come for them, it will open up for them, just like it did you when you were a young sprite and, you know, growing into, you know, getting your first assignments, your first pictures or cartoons published. I mean, look at the awards you've won over a lifetime. And, you know, nobody in Rochester, maybe nobody in Rochester knows how famous you actually really are in the work you've done.
Oh, no. I run into it all the time. I remember doing thousands of caricatures of kids and stuff like that. And I went into a doctor's office not long ago, and he had a drawing up on his wall, and it was mine. You know, that's just amazing. And, you know, editorial cartoons are fine. And I get that privilege of having an opinion that I can show to other people. But I decided that what I need to do is give them cartoons that aren't political. So I did 1,000 cartoons, over 1,000, that I'm sending to this place in London called Cartoon Stock. And they're all going to be cartoons and not about politics. They're going to be about just ordinary things during a day at a family, you know, or something.
Mm-hmm.
I think the political cartoons just go to a certain kind of person, especially if they agree with you, you know.
That's even better, right?
I never had a problem with that. And I have all the faults or things that could happen to just an ordinary job, you know, getting fired and everything. But there's several times my boss would come in and say to me, they want to fire you. I said, oh, really? I could calm it down. I could calm it down. They didn't want to lose my job. One of the things that was really great for me is I had editors that I really liked. You know, you're going to talk to Jerry. I think if you ask him sincerely what his editors were like, I don't know if he'd tell you, but one of them was really kind of, and you know, and you can't have somebody on your back and changing your cartoon because it just doesn't work.
Right.
You have to do it yourself.
That's correct. Well, Ed, we're running out of time here. I've got just a few seconds left. I want to point people to the book signing on Monday. We'll have Ed Fisher and Jerry Fearing from the St. Paul Pioneer Press coming down to Peacock Books. Yay, I can't wait. So, Ed, thank you so much for being my guest today. I look forward to seeing you at 11:30 Monday. And this is Lisa, your host of Lisa's Walk the Talk Show, signing out until next time.
Thanks for the conversation.
Thanks, Ed. Thank you so very much. You have a super, super day. All right.
Okay.
I love
thank
talking
you, ma'am.
To you, and I think I could talk to you all day, but thank you very much, and we'll see you on Monday. Bye, Ed.
Okay, thank you, and I'll see you Monday.
That sounds great. Bye now, Ed. This is Lisa, your host of Lisa's Walk the Talk Show, signing off until next time when I'll be back with a new featured guest to continue this Walk the Talk journey. We've been talking with Ed Fisher, editorial cartoonist for the Rochester Post-Bulletin and other papers, and he's an award-winning cartoonist. We'll have pictures on our blog. We'll have pictures of the signing. But really, if you're in the Rochester area on Monday,
you've been listening
November,
to Lisa's Walk the Talk Show. If you're an author or entertainer and you'd like to be considered for an upcoming broadcast, log on to Lisa's Walk the Talk website at www.lisalc.com for more information. That's www.lisalc.com. Lisa will be back next week to continue this Walk the Talk journey.
And this is Lisa. One more thing. The book signing, Peacock Books in the Galleria at University Square, downtown Rochester, across from the Mayo Clinic, 11:30 to 1:30, Ed Fisher and Jerry Fearing. Until then, have a good day.